This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Budget cuts and an increased emphasis on test prep have been edging art and music out of public schools for years. It's also slowly elbowed out health education. Boston public schools now have about one certified health instructor for every 9,000 students. All the while, obesity, teen pregnancy, and other problems that can be addressed by health education, in part, continue to disrupt young lives and academic careers. Boston school officials are aware of the problem, which is why they've been accepting some outside help. It's called Peer Health Exchange. Set up 4 years ago, the program trains college students to teach health to high schoolers. Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea reports it's been growing rapidly and under the radar.
It's third period at the O'Brien School in Roxbury, Boston's exam school for math and science. A couple of nice, clean-cut Harvard boys have come to a ninth-grade phys ed class to make a presentation.
Awesome. Okay, guys, we're going to go ahead and get started.
And it's not about athletics.
All right. What is the definition of sex according to PHE?
Anal
sex or genital-to-genital contact?
Okay, I think we better back up a few feet.
Great. So my name is Molly Green, and I'm the Boston Executive Director of Peer Health Exchange.
This is an organization that started at Yale about 10 years ago. Now they're in five major cities. Their rather broad mission statement is
to give teenagers the knowledge and skills they need to make healthy decisions. And we do that by training college students to teach a comprehensive health curriculum in public high schools that would otherwise lack health education.
Peer Health Exchange has been doing this teaching in Boston public schools since 2006. More than half of all ninth graders are getting this curriculum now. But this is the first time they've allowed any reporters to observe.
What is an effective way to reduce the risk of pregnancy and STIs?
I was right, use a condom.
Use a condom.
There are 12 workshops that happen over the spring semester, each taught by a different college student volunteer who specializes in the day's subject matter. Contraception, drugs, rape and sexual assault, nutrition. The workshop you're hearing right now is the last one, in which the whole curriculum is assimilated into a series of decision-making exercises.
So why don't we do a scenario about sexual decision-making? Cool?
With his chiseled features and aw-shucks demeanor, Harvard junior DJ Smolinski easily commands attention in the classroom, especially on sexual topics, especially with the girls.
Okay, so why don't we choose a location?
Behind a party.
Party. All right, Shelby said a party. That's a good one. Okay. And so what are the choices? What's the scenario?
Pretty simple, really, to have sex or not. DJ asked the kids to shout out a few benefits of the latter.
Not getting an STI.
Not getting an STI.
Not getting
pregnant. Not getting pregnant.
Not being a teen mom.
Not being a teen mom.
Yes.
Cool. Okay, pretty standard there. But then DJ asks the kids to name some benefits of the former, which is to say,
what's the positive of having sex? Yeah.
It's pleasurable.
Pleasure, okay, absolutely.
You would be, like, taking a step further in your relationship.
Okay, so maybe if you're ready in your relationship to kind of move forward, for sure.
Outside the classroom, I asked DJ and his fellow instructor, Max Braunfield.
I could imagine that a lot of people would hear that and think, wow, they even would be surprised that you left open the possibility of there being positives for kids their age to have sex.
Yeah, well, the thing is, the program really tries to emphasize that it's about teens making decisions for themselves. And the idea of the program of giving them information means that we don't want to leave out a possibility that may be a very real, may be a reality for them.
And the other thing is, if we kind of come in and sort of tell them what to do, they're not going to be as open to us and the information that we sort of share, so we want to keep it open and just give them the tools. Let's have sex.
No.
Why not?
Back in the classroom, students Darwin Serpris and Elizabeth Cabral carry the scenario into a mock dialogue.
I really don't want to.
Oh, but sex is awesome.
It's really not if you actually look at the consequences. But my virginity is really important, and I want to wait till marriage.
But I'm not important.
You are important, but
let's
you'll
get married now. Let's get it. Yeah.
No, you have to understand.
Nice. That was really well done. That was really good.
As class wraps up, I ask student Hanson Prosper.
So, what do you think about this?
It's actually good to know because it helps you in the future with actually a decision that you make in your life.
Are you saying that for real, or are you just saying that because you know that's what you're supposed to say?
Oh, no, I'm saying that for real.
Can I give a shout-out?
Yeah, you can.
Hi, Mom.
That's all you're going to say?
And Dad.
And I'll add my shout-out to Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea for that report. Thank you, Adam.
My pleasure.
Listeners, would you be comfortable having a college student teach such sensitive information to your teenager? Or has your child even gone through this curriculum? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Well, here to talk a little bit more about the Peer Health Exchange is Jill Carter. She's wellness coordinator for the Boston Public Schools. Jill Carter, welcome.
Welcome. Yes, thank you. Sorry.
That's quite all right. Also with us is Dr. Alice Mark, fellow in family planning at the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the Boston University School of Medicine. She's also on the Boston Board of Overseers for Peer Health Exchange. Dr. Mark, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Jill Carter, let me start with you. I mean, it's truly stunning to hear actually how many BPS students are getting this curriculum, more than half of ninth graders. Hasn't been much attention paid to it until now, until you so graciously let Adam in there. What's the reaction been from parents about the program?
Well, I can say, first of all, my position in the district is I'm the wellness coordinator for the district, and that might sound like I'm in charge of health education for the district, but currently my role is to work on wellness policy implementation, which is focused on obesity prevention. Mm-hmm. Peer Health Exchange is one of our fabulous partners that is helping us address comprehensive health education. But I would say that from my standpoint, I don't have research to tell you about what parents have said about Peer Health Exchange.
Okay, do they have the option if parents want to opt out of the program if they don't necessarily want their children to participate?
I would guess that would be the case.
Okay.
But I really don't.
Dr. Mark, do you know if parents have the option to opt out if they want?
I think they do, but I'm actually not sure.
Okay. Well, let me just ask a broader question then. I mean, we have college students teaching high school students here about all manner of things. Sexual education is one of them. Dr. Mark, do you so far, are schools telling you that they're doing an effective job? Are these college students doing an effective, good job in teaching the?
So we actually hear back from our students who take a pre- and a post-test before and after the curriculum, and we find that many of our students say that they are actually integrating some of the things that they've learned during the course of the 12 sessions that they do with our college students. They've actually implemented some of the things they've learned and actually translated them into health behavior. So from sort of a knowledge standpoint, it's certainly been effective.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose one of the reasons why people would find Peer Health Exchange so interesting in your particular mm-hmm. experience of it is, you know, as an obstetrics professional at Boston Medical Center, perhaps you see a lot of young parents coming in who maybe did or didn't have some kind of health education.
So absolutely. So, you know, as an OBGYN and especially someone who's dealing in the field of family planning, I see a lot of adolescents who really could have benefited from this knowledge. And unfortunately, I see the negative effects of unintended, unplanned pregnancy or sexually transmitted infection. And I feel like if those young women or students had really gotten some more education or support, they may not be in the position that they're in today.
Mm-hmm. Jill Carter, let me ask you a quick question about the dynamic of the program itself between mm-hmm. those college students and those high school students. As we heard in Adam's report, for example, we've got some maybe white Harvard students speaking to classes who may be largely black or Latino. Do they necessarily consider each other peers in this peer health exchange, or do they look upon the college students who are coming in as kind of still from the outside?
Well, you're asking me a question that I can't honestly answer. I've heard great things from our teachers that use Peer Health Exchange, that it is well received by the by students. So I can only, you know, repeat what I know. So
I'd be happy to say that, you know, although certainly the college students and the students that are teaching in the classroom might come from different cultural backgrounds, the fact that they're really similar in age says to the students, you know, these are people that have gone through what I'm going through really recently. And I think getting that information from someone who is more of a peer, who's more of an equal, makes a lot more sense than sometimes getting that information from someone who's older. Often the students don't feel like they're teaching to, you know, talking to their teachers. They may not be talking to their parents at home, and this is a really great resource for information that's recent and relevant for them. So the college students really, you know, perform that role in a very efficient way and a really acceptable way for the students.
You know, in the age that we live in where many people believe that abstinence-only education mm-hmm. may be the best way to go, what's your opinion? What do you make of the fact that, from Adam's
Adams' report, we heard that some of what these students talk about is actually, you know, maybe exploring the reasons to have sex.
Right. Well, I think, you know, we actually know from some of our research on abstinence-only education that, unfortunately, that type of program really doesn't work. And what we're trying to do here is to, first of all, there is a reality that by the time students leave high school, 70% of them will be sexually active. And we know that actually, although three-quarters of ninth graders actually choose not to have sex, 25% of ninth graders in the Boston Public Schools are having sex. So we know that we have to address what is the reality. And for some students, that might not be abstinence. On the other hand, you know, what we're trying to educate people about is to give them some skills, some knowledge, some tools that they can use when they're in different decision-making situations where we can either support them in their decision to go with abstinence, like you heard in that little vignette in the beginning, which was totally great. Or, you know, if they do decide to have sex, what are some of the consequences and how can they actually protect themselves from some of those ill effects?
Mm-hmm. Adam Ragusea, you know, you were there, and I don't want to focus too much on sexual education because it's not the only thing that kids are learning.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, they do a lot of nutrition, other types of wellness, relationships. I'll tell you, when I was there, Max and DJ, who were teaching, were asking some questions about nutrition to the kids. They asked them, say you've got meat and you've got vegetables and grains on a plate, which of those portions should be the largest in any given meal? And the kids unanimously said, protein, protein, of course, protein should be the biggest.
And the right answer is
vegetables. and, you know, a couple of kids in the class really genuinely, you could see on their face, surprised to hear for the first time that Burger King is really not necessarily the best thing for you. And this is right in Jill's wheelhouse, and I bet that might hurt a little bit to hear.
Well, you know, we know that students' eating patterns are influenced by advertising and media messages that surround them, and we know that access to healthy foods is critical in allowing them to make the right choices. That's why it's important to teach them, you know, healthy behaviors, but that's not enough. And in Boston schools, what we've been focusing on for a long time is creating school meals and access to healthy foods, the easy choice, so that students can make the healthy choice.
Do you think in terms of the nutrition education they're getting through Peer Health Exchange that it's sort of breaking down those previously held stereotypes about what is the right thing to eat?
Yes, it seems as though they're doing a good job meeting the goals that we would want in terms of outlining the five food groups and actually giving them some opportunity to practice those behaviors that you're hoping that they're going to do when they're not in the classroom.
I suppose just sort of to paint a little bit of a backdrop here, how prevalent is obesity and type 2 diabetes, let's say, in Boston public schools? Do we have a lot of students who are suffering from that?
Well, we have 46% of our students that are at an unhealthy weight.
Wow.
So that would be greater than the 85th percentile for body mass index would be the measure that we were using.
So this is a very important message for them to be getting while in school.
Absolutely.
Hey, Adam, let me ask you, having been there, we got a little flavor of it from your piece, but really, what do you say was the interaction like between the college students and the high school students? Was it like chummy? Was it kind of tense at the start? Like, did you get the sense that learning was happening?
It's obvious to me that these instructors, the college student instructors, are very highly trained, and they're very careful about what they say. It's surprising how not extemporaneous a lot of it is. That was how it struck me.
Absolutely. I mean, we do structure a curriculum that is evidence-based so that we're using, you know, current knowledge that is scientific to give to the students as tools. And we want to have that be consistent with all the workshops. So we are working on that. But we're also working on, you know, allowing giving the college students a lot of teaching skills that they can use, classroom management. So it's a really excellent program as well for the college students who may be interested in the future in becoming teachers in the Boston Public Schools or becoming public health professionals.
Jill Carter.
Yes, I just wanted to add that, you know, in the opening you mentioned the number of health education teachers, and I think it's really important to understand that in the district we're actually addressing health education in a number of ways. Nutrition education has been integrated into math, science, social studies, language arts, and phys ed for a long time. We have health education folks from UMass Extension, educators coming, Boston College. There are many community partnerships. In addition, we have a district-level sexuality coordinator who does trainings with teachers. We also have violence prevention specialists. So while counting number of health educators sounds like we're not doing a lot, we actually are. And I just would say that moving forward next year, we have funding to hire a health education director to set some standard, to revise our standards, and to work with community partners.
Well, that's Jill Carter. She's wellness coordinator for the Boston Public Schools. Jill Carter, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Dr. Alice Mark, fellow in family planning at the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the Boston University School of Medicine and a member of the Board of Overseers for Peer Health Exchange. Thank you.
Thank you.
Adam Ragusea, thank you as well.
You bet.
Up next.
Theater is the medium. Without an audience, it doesn't exist.
ART Artistic Director Diane Paulus. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.